A singer, songwriter. And harmonica virtuoso, Buddy Green, with his song, How Long. We heard from the African Music Experience, above all, also from Ashley Cleveland and her rendition of Precious Lord, Take My Hand. It's about to 12 minutes now after the hour on our Broken Road Radio Monday. We're joined by Dr. Don Clark from Garden Valley, Texas. Don, good morning.
Well, good morning, Jim, and good morning, Dave. How are you two folks?
Well, doing just fine here, and I got to tell you, it was a delightful weekend. Don and David and I and a bunch of folks were over at the University of an odd name now. University of Northwest is what they call it. It used to be Northwest Bible College in St. Paul, actually in Roseville. And we were all there for the big occasion this weekend, the 50th anniversary of Creation Moment. So we got to see Don in person and enjoy dinner together. And Don, it was just delightful. It was so good to see you and meet your wife, too.
Oh, well, thank you. Yes, it was. We had a great time, and we had a great time at dinner that after the event, and the event, I think, went well, and we were so pleased that so many people came out for the event.
Yeah, it was a good turnout, and some delightful folks. It was fun, kind of hobnobbing, and we ate at a place called the Good Earth, which I seemed to think was appropriate for us. It's a restaurant. Chain, well, not a chain. They've got several restaurants here in Minnesota and maybe elsewhere that specialize in organic and unprocessed foods. And of course, with Dr. Don being a biochemist and a frequent speaker here on GMO products and organic foods and healthy living, it seemed appropriate, and it was nice. It was good. Went over well, I think. Don, you've discovered something else going on though that's a little bit alarming here. Superbugs. Tell us what a superbug is.
Well, a superbug, typically they're bacteria, but they can be other things. But we've all, I think, heard by this time the term antibiotic-resistant bacteria. And in all, if you overdose or incorrectly, let's say, dose with an antibiotic, a bacterial infection, you run the risk of developing a certain population of the bacteria that actually form bacterial resistance. And so that population begins to grow and multiply, and what that then means, if you try to use that same antibiotic on that bacterial strain, it doesn't work anymore.
You know, I've heard that it also attributed to people who come home with a prescription for antibiotics and don't run the course of the prescription. They take it for a shorter amount of time or not the full doses and wind up with kind of semi-resistant bugs that then develop into fully resistant bugs. So partly it's our own fault. But what role does science have in this and medical profession in particular?
Well, it's a big problem in hospitals. In some parts of the world, it's bigger than it is now here in the United States, but it's going to be getting to be a bigger problem. We use all kinds of things to try to clean, the rooms, the patient rooms, and the equipment in hospitals and stuff, and all these cleaning agents have an effect. There's some bacteria and some, strains of viruses and stuff that just aren't being killed, and so it becomes a big problem. If you get a bacterial infection, let's say in a hospital, that is resistant to the normal antibiotics or normal agents that are typically used to kill the bacteria, then that bacteria can not only affect you as the patient, but it can affect other patients in the hospital and the nurses and the hospital care people and cause major problems. And if that gets out of control, which it has in some parts of the world, then we've got a big problem on our hands.
Now, you've drawn our attention to an article over at Mercola.com. By the way, with the podcast that will go up on our website later, we'll have a link to this article if you'd like to read it. Otherwise, you can go to Mercola.com and just type in, search under superbugs. I'm sure it'll come up for you. But here they're talking about NDM1, and this is more than just antibiotic and bacteria. This has to do with a change in in DNA of bacteria. And they're talking about things like a drug-resistant tuberculosis that may be spreading rapidly. And it looks like India is kind of the hub of the problem here, isn't it?
Well, India is a problem for a number of reasons, but this particular strain, actually the New Delhi metallo-beta lactamase 1, is, mm-hmm. which is abbreviated NDM1, is a gene, and is in this case it's an enzyme, but it causes the reason why this is a little more threatening than just your simple bacterial resistance is that resistance, this particular gene can be transmitted from bacteria to bacteria. So if you have one strain of bacteria, for example, that has this gene in it, it can transmit its DNA to another unrelated bacteria, and now you've got two bacteria, two different types of bacteria that are now drug resistant. The reason why India is such a big deal is that, well, not only is their population very, very high, but they have been using antibiotics. Antibiotics are very cheap on the market, and they're not prescription like they are. Most of them are not prescription like they are over here. So just your general population has access to them, and they've been overdosing. That's part of the problem is overdosing and not taking a complete dose or a partial dose. So you start developing all kinds of bacteria that are, now resistant.
So what we're saying then is with overdosing, it still doesn't get all the bacteria, and it encourages at least some of the bacteria to develop its own resistance. So in other words, the overdosing is ineffective.
Well, yeah, maybe the term overdosing is not necessarily the mm-hmm. The most accurate term. It's really overuse.
Okay, I got
it's,
you.
It's using antibiotics when that person hasn't been typed for a particular type of antibiotic. Mm-hmm. The bacteria that an antibiotic works for. So you feel a little sick, and you go to your drugstore or the grocery store. You pick up, an antibiotic, just general antibiotic, and you start using that. And it doesn't solve the problem for you. And so you try a different one, and that doesn't solve the problem. Well, what you're doing is you're dosing your body and the natural bacteria that are there anyway with a bunch of bacteria of antibiotics. And you're internally developing resistance to those antibiotics. Mm-hmm.
So it isn't controlled. It isn't prescribed to the degree that it needs to be. So it's really not under the control of the medical profession in India.
Yes, that's correct. Mm-hmm. And the other problem with India is that a lot of folks from around the world go to India for their surgeries. Mainly because it's a lot cheaper to get, let's say, heavier hip surgery done in India mm-hmm. than it is here in the United States. So you can buy a ticket to and from India, have your surgery done, be set up in a very fancy hotel and cared for, very well in India, and that will be a lot cheaper than actually having the surgery done here. Now, the problem is you go to India and you have your surgery done, and then you pick up a bacteria, let's say, that is, that is resistant, or several bacteria that is resistant to antibiotics, and now you bring those bacteria, because you're infected, you bring those bacteria back home, and that particular bacterial resistance is now spread here at home. So it's happening in the developed nations, Europe and Japan and France, and these countries where folks are going down, going over to India for their surgeries, they're now bringing it back home.
And apparently, going on through this Mercola article, there is particular fear of a drug-resistant tuberculosis that is apparently spreading and is surfacing in a number of areas of the world. I guess it says one case reported transferring to neighboring Australia from Papua New Guinea, and other areas. So this may relate to a very specific malady that we thought we had whipped.
And a lot of these diseases we thought we had whipped, and we had whipped. But they're coming back. And like tuberculosis and many of the bacteria problems, gonorrhea is going to become a big problem, is becoming a problem in some areas. You know, things that we've had drugs and multiple drugs for now don't work. And so I think we are bordering on the time, you know, in the world where Jesus said in Matthew 24, not only is there going to be wars and rumors of wars, and we know that there's been wars and rumors of wars for a long time, but he's talking about a very large increase in that. But he's also in that same section in Matthew 24, he talks about pestilence and plagues coming upon, you know, the earth again. Mm-hmm. And here with modern science, you just don't think of plagues, you know, around the world. I mean, how can that be possible with modern medicine? Well, here's how it can be possible with bacteria and other types of microorganisms that used to cause, you know, major problems for people being resistant to our, in quote, modern drugs. That's going to be a major problem.
And it's not so much in this case as it is with some of our other topics that bad science is at the root of this, but it's how do we handle that knowledge? How do we implement that information properly to make full use of it when apparently it's actually doing more harm than good or gradually shifting in that direction?
Well, and I think, places like India, places like it's now known, for example, that you are safer outside of a hospital than inside of a hospital with regard to picking up infections. Mm-hmm. Because of the things that we've just spoken about. And it's not necessarily the procedures that the hospitals are using, but it's just agents themselves and not having a wide variety of, let's say, new broad-spectrum antibiotics available to handle these new drug-resistant strains of microorganisms. And apparently the pharmaceutical companies, there was a time when pharmaceutical companies were, you know, developing a new antibiotic almost every week. Now, no, it wasn't every week, but, you know, you heard of a new antibiotic, pretty much, you know, every year, every maybe 6 months, another company was developing another type of antibiotic. That activity has slowed tremendously because the larger pharmaceutical companies are looking for those, super returns. And the super returns comes from drugs that you don't just take for, let's say, 10 days. Drugs that once you start with, you know, in life, like cardiovascular drugs, for example, you're going to be taking them for the rest of your life. So even the research in development of new, new pharmaceuticals has decreased. And this too is adding to the problem.
What does our consumption of antibiotics have to do with maybe our own natural resistance to disease or even I'm thinking more commonly available substances that may have persisted in old folk medicines as effective against certain diseases. You know, you think of taking garlic or just plain vitamin C or this or that. Does our consumption of antibiotics affect our natural ability to resist disease?
Well, yeah, of course it does. And here's the reason why. Because if you take an antibiotic, orally, that antibiotic is going to wipe out the microflora in your intestinal system. And believe it or not, your intestinal system is responsible for 50% of your immune system. So your first defense is in your gut. And so things that we eat and things, you don't have that natural resistance anymore. Mm-hmm. So just by the fact that you've taken an antibiotic, you've wiped out a lot of the microflora. That's why, you know, in some cases they tell you, well, you know, you better build your microflora up either by taking probiotics after you've had a treatment of antibiotics. Some places don't even tell you that, but that's that's what you should be doing. You know, or eating, you know, fermented type of foods, such as, you know, natural yogurt that has live bacteria in it, mm-hmm. And sauerkraut with the live bacteria in it. You know, you can buy these products on your grocery shelf in your grocery stores, but you have to make sure that it's got the live bacteria. Because just because you buy sauerkraut doesn't necessarily mean that that there's bacteria in it, and it's not going to do you, you know, the good that you're looking for.
You know, I don't recall ever seeing sauerkraut labeled with a probiotic content.
Sauerkraut used to be made in, you know, obviously in Germany,
yeah.
In every home. You would have some cabbage, and you would, you know, have a starter solution, mm-hmm. of your bacteria. You throw that in, and pretty soon mm-hmm. you've got, you know, you've got your natural sauerkraut. Here again, I mean, it's like we want to make sure that everything is sterile and everything is pure. But in that process, we are wiping out the natural good bacteria that, in some cases, could be saving our lives.
And this kind of relates to the whole idea that we keep ourselves too clean, that we don't allow kids to play in the dirt anymore. We shower daily. We do things that, just for the sake of health, really aren't necessary. And in fact, we might be diminishing our own natural resistance to these diseases and to bacteria.
Well, with some of the practices that we're doing, certainly, it was interesting in my travels recently up to Minnesota and back. I was waiting for a plane. I think it was in the Dallas-Fort Worth area to fly up to Minnesota, and I saw an Asian gal with a mask on. And that reminded me of the SARS scare, you know, that came from the Asian population that she was. And I don't know if this is the case, but it, you know, if she was wearing the mask to help, you know, prevent her from getting any of the diseases that, you know, might be in the mm-hmm. environment. Mm-hmm. Well, if we raise our children in a sterile environment, they won't have a natural immunity to a lot of things. You have to be exposed at very low doses to a pathogen in order to build up immunity. And that happens by kids playing in the dirt and by, you know, not necessarily having a super sterile, you know, environment for our kids growing up. Now, that being said, with these new strains of antibiotic-resistant bacteria, we do want to take some precautions when going into public places. And, you know, the old adage, you know, you see signs on, and it's an OSHA requirement, in restrooms of restaurants that, you know, the workers have to wash their hands after they go to the bathroom. Well, it's just a good habit to do those things anyway.
And it amazes me still to see how many people don't.
Yeah, no, I know. If you go on the airports and you go in other places, and people just do their business and then just walk out. And it
is antibacterial the same as antibiotic? Because I'm thinking of the prevalence of antibacterial hand soaps. It's almost everywhere.
Right.
Is that the same?
It doesn't have an antibiotic in it. It's got, you know, maybe it's got alcohol, maybe it's got some other type of just broad spectrum, mm-hmm. you know, chemical in it that will help, you know, kill bacteria on your hands. Well, you touch anything, you're picking up bacteria. So once you leave the area sanitation is not necessarily the same as sterilization.
That's really more marketing than medicine, then.
Well, I mean, it's helpful. I mean, when we went on short-term missionary trips, we would always bring some hand sanitizer, mm-hmm. And use that before we ate or drank anything. Mainly because there's bugs in the soil of third world. They're all over the place, but they're different types of pathogens. And because we don't have the natural resistance to that built up, because we didn't live in that, we weren't raised in that area like the general population, we can get sick quicker in a situation like that. So they do have their benefits. But just to use it on a regular basis, it's like the more you use a product like that, the less effective, it becomes. And so then the bacteria that survive after a period of time is now you've developed some resistant bacteria that no longer respond to those sanitizing agents.
Well, I think we're generally becoming more and more aware of the risks. I know even going to grocery stores now here in East Dakota, where we are, and maybe we're behind the rest of the country, but now there's sanitary wipes to wipe down the shopping carts and wipe off your hands and just keep clean as you navigate through a grocery store. So people are thinking about it, even if maybe we're thinking the wrong way.
And I think in essence, we're turning. If that becomes a general practice, we're going to be turning our whole environment into a hospital, because that's what they do in hospitals. Mm-hmm. They wipe surfaces down and everything, but yet there are bacteria and other microbes that are resistant to those type of cleaning agents and sanitizing agents. And in essence, over time, we tend to make things worse rather than better. So I think one of the questions you might ask is, how do we protect ourselves from this onslaught of bacteria and microbes that are becoming resistant? How does a person, protect themselves, and possibly even if they do get sick, how do they help to overcome their illness if the antibiotics that they normally would take isn't going to be effective?
And the power of this thing to destroy should not be underestimated. I think back now, this is history, not science, but if you go back to the 14th century in Europe, after the plague ravaged Europe and killed perhaps as much as a third, or even some estimates are 50% of the people, people tended to not go into cities anymore. They tended to, they didn't know what the cause was precisely, but they felt they had to stay away from other people to avoid, I don't know if they had the word infection, but to avoid catching the plague. And so people tended to stay at home and cluster in some smaller villages. And it used to be they would go to churches and stay for all day, because that's where they got fed and cared for, among other things. But now they were afraid of crowds. And it literally changed the culture of Europe. And so this kind of thing, it's hard to envision that happening again. But to see 10% or 20% or 30% of the people gone in a few days is a pretty chilling thing.
Well, it certainly would be. We haven't seen plagues like that in eons. I mean, for a long time, and I certainly haven't seen it. Mm-hmm. Maybe my parents and their parents for sure experienced it. But in this in quote modern age, it's kind of unthinkable. You mean we don't have anything to stop that? So, and I would, tend to agree that congested areas is going to just multiply the problem. And in our era of, transportation, you can get anywhere around the world that you want in, if not a day, certainly within 2 days. Mm-hmm. So anything that, pops up in one part of the world will pretty rapidly spread, throughout the whole world.
Well, so I'm wondering, how do we recommend protecting yourself against this? It's kind of out of our hands. We're not going to be able to slow down transportation. We're not going to depopulate the cities. The economics militate against a solution here, it seems to me.
Well, and there is there are solutions. There are natural solutions to some of these problems, and so rather than rushing off maybe to your doctor for the solution, we should maybe look back at some of the solutions that used, you know, back in those times that, you know, people, it did indeed get healed or protected themselves from the type of plagues that, you know, you were talking about earlier.
And of course, those plagues happened in years past, but there are a lot of good things about some of the old folk medicine that we've kind of lost. Some surprising things. For example, I've learned that the ancient Greeks had aspirin. They didn't call it aspirin. It was a certain willow bark that provided acetylsalicylic acid, and they used it for headaches and in other maladies. So it's not like aspirin, the miracle drug of the 19th century, is really a miracle drug of the 19th century. It's been around much longer than that. Maybe there are some other things that we just simply need to learn about.
Well, and that's the case. I mean, we have to go back. One of the things that will certainly help protect us from these types of superbugs is just optimizing our diet. The fast food diet that we are certainly accustomed to doesn't help matters. So an overabundance of trans fatty acids that one can get with, unfortunately, your French fries and other fried foods, it's a natural byproduct of just the heating. If it's not in the oil originally, just heating any oil that is not completely saturated, will produce trans fatty acids. Mm-hmm. So staying away from those type of foods, eating, growing your own vegetables, like we've talked about before.
Well, you know, it sounds like protection really comes from the soil, things that are grown in healthy soil. And that our artificial effort to control disease is leading to our own downfall in that we don't naturally defend against these like we used to.
And right, and you know, having the small farms, as we've talked about on this on this program, which is very beneficial for your health, for a number of reasons. Your small farmer is probably not dosing, and you can find this out very easily from a small farmer, is not dosing his cattle with huge amounts of antibiotics, or even smaller amounts of antibiotics in the feed, which is another big problem. Mm-hmm. That's where other bacterial resistance come from. So if you raise your own cattle, for example, or cows for milk, your own you don't have to feed them with antibiotics to keep them healthy. You just keep them healthy by letting them range in areas that they're not going to pick up a lot of different diseases. Or the reason why antibiotics are used is because they have these animals in tight quarters.
Well, there's another notion. We think of it as economies of scale. When you can herd thousands of cattle around and negotiate them to slaughter, but they don't get cared for like the few animals do on a small farm. And it's that caring for the animals, doing what's right for the animals, that results in a healthy product.
Well, and that's right. So that's one thing that we have to do. We have to look for those types of products. Mm-hmm. And anybody that has any land, raise your own if you can. And that goes for chickens too, because chickens are now the chicken that you get in your grocery store, it's from, they've got thousands of chickens in a bin. Well, one chicken gets sick, you've just wiped out, thousands of chickens.
Well, and we know that there have been a good many recalls of various products, of different food products over the years, and that's alarming. David, are you in on our next purchase of grass-fed beef here?
How is the beef?
Well, we're going to have our first helping of it tonight. I don't know yet.
Now we know where it is, but
we know where it is, but yeah, we haven't tested it ourselves. I'm looking forward to it, though.
I mean, eating products like that is a big benefit. Exercise, as much as we hate to necessarily admit it, exercise is good for the body.
Well, people used to be a lot more physical in the old days. They could do tons more work than we can. You know,
that's right.
And did.
We, you know, we sit behind our desks and do our work. It's become a society where you don't get out very much. Mm-hmm. So you're not exposed to the sun, and so you're therefore not producing vitamin D. Vitamin D has been found to have antibiotic properties.
I didn't know that.
And actually, they've done tuberculosis patients and taking them outside for a period of time and just exposing them to the sun. And guess what? Their tuberculosis has gone away. Hmm. So, you know, we do have some alternatives to helping us, you know, get healthy in these type of things.
Well, it's interesting, and again, this article is over at Mercola.com. It's called Rise of the Superbugs, and we'll have a link for you on the podcast that we post up on BrokenRoadRadio.com a little bit later today. So we're talking with Dr. Don Clark of Creation Moments, a biochemist and a denizen of Garden Valley, Texas. And Don, we're grateful for what you bring to us every Monday. Thanks so much.
Well, thank you for allowing me to be a part of your program.
And we'll catch Don again. Oh, David, did you have something else to say there?
I do have one other thing to interject. I want to just to bring a slight positive bit of news here. The something that I'd never experienced or never expected to hear last year when I was having a little bout with some problems down south. It was after a colonoscopy. And one of the, I called the clinic to get an appointment with the doctor to see what they would suggest. And maybe, you know, my thinking was they'll probably give me some more shots or some more pills or something like that. And the nurse practitioner said, go eat yogurt and get a probiotic. And I said, I've never heard such a thing. But this was a nurse practitioner in the established medical arena. So maybe that's a bit of good news, or maybe it was just a last-ditch effort to get me keep me out of the clinic. Or tell me to go ahead and cure myself. Just stop bothering. Don't be bothering me anymore with these questions.
No, I think she was serious. I think it was good advice.
But it was. But it. You know. And who knows if you know what works. But eventually, you know, the problem went away. But I still take probiotics every day, and along with all my other unusual medications, fish oil, and that sort of stuff.
And you're doing just fine then, huh?
But I think I'm doing fine. Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. Don, again, thank you, and we'll look forward to next week's conversation. Right now, music from Rich Mullins on our Broken Road Radio Monday morning together.